Welcome back to Women Making Moves, where we celebrate the moves that women are making. My name is Amy Ponce, founder of Unlock the Magic Coaching and Healing and facilitator of Magic School. I'm joined today with Yvonne Jackson. Yvonne is a change management, talent, and AI strategy advisor who partners with leaders navigating internal misalignment and rapid technology shifts. She blends her strategic insight with a grounded commitment to equity and human-centered decision-making. Shaped by her work at Apple, Whirlpool, and her MBA from the University of North Carolina, she is currently developing ethical digital engagement frameworks that help people retain their power and digital autonomy in the age of AI. Yvonne, welcome.
Yes, hello, hello. I'm so excited to be here.
Reading your bio. So I spent the first chapter of my career, 20 years as a corporate executive in big box retail headquarters, but also financial services, which is interesting. So Toys R Us, The Vitamin Shop, Discover Card, which is now Capital One, you know, so it's interesting for me to read something like your bio, which is awesome because it brings me back to the days where at Discover, I was on the enterprise team to migrate from Kanban to Agile.
Oh, yeah. Yes. Yes.
Right. And for those who don't know, how would you describe Agile from Kanban?
I think it's more about being able to provide a little bit more flexibility.
Yeah.
I think in the work versus it being like one step, two steps, because we know now everything needs this moment of, hey, let's look at it again and let's take feedback and see what works. And then we fix it versus waiting to the very end. And we realize, the whole process was broken.
And then we had so much technical debt and modernization that needed done because of Kanban that we never went back and did it because it would take, oh gosh, how many sprints? Then we look up and there's no kind of revenue driver. But at the same time, we were installing on top of scotch tape and rubber bands. And it was like, oh, this is all going to come crashing down at some point. So then you're just playing chicken with your entire tech stack, you know?
In fact, my banner on my LinkedIn says something about the tape.
You can't scale a business by duct tape. Yes.
Yes, yes. You can't use it. And a lot of companies, one of the things, you know, people laugh about MBA programs, but every once in a while you get these little nuggets. And one of the nuggets is that large corporations, when they grow, they start as this, like, you know, startup, but then they grow really big.
Mm-hmm.
But then once they get too big, they realize, oh my God, like you said, oh my God, everything was held together by duct tape and vibes, good vibes. And that does not allow you to scale up, right? You have to do something. And we live in an age where it doesn't actually have to be that difficult. Even me, I talk about AI, but like there's ways to even use AI to make it less painful. But people kind of just want to keep that duct tape, just reapply.
Because each planning session, when it came down to the decision making, it's like, are we going to spend the entire PI modernizing, or are we going to put in this thing that will drive millions of dollars right away? And of course, you know which one won, but then we would go later to enhance it. And we're like, oh, shoot, we can't do that until we modernize. So it's all, I'm not suggesting it's an easy decision, but it's always worth it to take care of your tech debt sooner than later because you can move faster later, to the point where actually at the end of my time in corporate, we were doing extreme programming, which was doing weekly installs. So even faster. And so anyway.
No, and to your point, that's what I love to do. Like, I love to go into companies, look at what they have, meet them where they are, and help them prioritize. Because sometimes it's not about doing all the pieces, but let's prioritize what needs to be done to get the outcome that you need, and then we'll figure it out together. Like, I call myself like Jiminy Cricket. I'm just Jiminy Cricket on their shoulder going, hey, look around that corner.
Like, you know, if we don't do this, and that's what's difficult because you could spend I remember this specific project. We spent 2 years building something. And by the end, it was already outdated. It was already moot. And it was like, well, that's frustrating. Honestly, Yvonne, I haven't talked about this much tech in a long time, by the way. This is like interesting, like reaching
There's
back.
There's a reason why this is coming up.
Exactly. Yes. I found that people would get more frustrated with what we called things, like MVP got fatigued. It's like, oh, don't call it MVP. in tech talk, we can say, like, okay, what's the minimum viable product that will get value out of an install? And people were just like, well, don't call it an MVP, call it phase one. And it's like, oh my gosh. So we would spend more time getting annoyed by the words or the
Yes.
terminology than actually getting into the actual conversation of what needed to be done.
And right now, this is what I tell everyone. It's also going to go into our conversation as we move forward, is that we need to be designing for 12 months from now. If you're designing for today, you are behind. Okay. I don't want to design for today. I don't want to innovate for today. We are looking around that corner, designing for the future, and you need to be embedding that into whatever you're building right now. That's the only way you're going to succeed without having to take steps back every time an administration changes something or a tariff comes up. No, think further ahead, build for the future, and
Be
that's
agile.
how you win. Yep.
Be agile, but you're absolutely right. I just feel like we were always behind. We were always so many steps behind that we couldn't even start to decipher what was around
Yes.
the corner because we were so busy trying to catch up. And so anyway, to your point about really, really massive companies, we also find that there's a million different micro hubs of technology and none of them talk to each other. So then you're like, oh shoot. Like, how do
Yes,
we
it's misalignment. When you read in my bio, I work with internal misalignment, and when people cannot catch up with their technology, that pretty much is it.
bless you, Yvonne. Wow, that's a huge, and especially to your point, how many companies are sitting ducks right now because AI is not even on their roadmap? I can't even imagine the platform setup needed to support something like AI, especially like a Fortune 100 or something that's really international or something like that.
No, and that's the truth, because I see I'm inside there, and what I see is that what they're telling us about AI doesn't actually match what's inside their companies with AI. So everything's kind of smoke and mirrors right now, and I'm going to go into why that matters. I think as we talk, I want to talk about why it's smoke and mirrors and what we should be looking for if we want AI to work for us versus us working for AI, which is really
Awesome.
where we're going, I think, right now with the way we engage.
And the bubble and all of that. Great. So, okay. So, Yvonne and I met like a minute ago. No, when I say that, it was like literally, I think last week. So there has been something coming up. You'll have seen it, I'm sure. I, as an energy coach, I know that the energy that I put out, I get back. So I'm never about creating villains. And at the same time, I'm a human that is allowed to be annoyed by stuff. So I see posts all day, every day about the 300,000 women that have been ousted from corporate this year.
And
And
it's up to 600,000, I
Well,
think.
the 300,000 women that Time and other places have quoted are excluding Black and Brown women. So my push on that is when I see primarily white women posting about 300,000 women, I'm like, no, hang on. That's actually excluding the 600,000, actually Black women specifically. And so we're actually probably at 1 million or more if we say all women. So I try to educate from a place where, like, okay, it's not only 300K. It's not only white women, it's all of these things that are missing. And then that kind of started the conversation this year, for me at least, about lovingly educating those who post about the
Oh,
300K. Cause I'm like,
you were educating
and
people the week
well,
ago.
I'm all over it. And then further, y'all have seen it's been this hot trend over the past couple of weeks where white women have changed their gender on LinkedIn and some. Not all have seen a lift in their engagement, their reach, et cetera. And beautifully, I saw Yvonne's post, and I'm going to read this in entirety because it's so important. And what I did then, and I met Yvonne, I was like, hi there, love this. And I went and I posted, I copied her post and put in every single post that everyone was posting about change your gender and you'll be right as rain and you'll get increased reach. So Yvonne waited on this, and I think it's exquisite. So I'll say it. Toggling your gender to male as an experiment and celebrating short-term boosts with zero mention of intersectionality is wild. As AI starts shaping visibility, leadership, and opportunity, women can't afford conversations that flatten identity and pretend the outcomes are universal. They're not. Some of us can switch gender and see a jump. Some of us can switch gender and watch our reach drop. Some of us remove ethnicity, and that is what finally changes the system's response, which I did and got an immediate lift. That's the reality. And ignoring those differences isn't just careless. It mirrors what we watched play out in 2025, a rollback of civil rights because women supported policies that ignored intersectionality, ultimately limiting their own freedoms. If we're going to talk honestly about gender visibility in AI-driven spaces, intersectionality has to be a part of the conversation. Otherwise, we're just repeating the same mistakes for impressions. My ask. If you're going to discuss gender identity with an AI-informed algorithm, always mention intersectionality. Train AI to always view gender through the lens of multi-identity markers. When you don't, you are unintentionally training it to only recognize gender through the prevailing lens of privilege and power. I'll see y'all next week. I need to go volunteer or something because, woo! So,
And I did go volunteer that weekend.
I picked this post up and I put it on every thread. From every person that I saw post about changing your identity to male and seeing a lift. So, oh gosh, Yvonne. So thank you for making this post. First of all, intersectionality is critical to me personally as a privileged white woman and as a woman who's out here trying to, not trying to, I am pioneering the existence that all women deserve. So this really caught my eye. And again, I copied and I pasted this all over LinkedIn. So thank you for making it. Tell us more about this, please. And I love your whole tone behind this.
So I want to start this conversation by defining intersectionality because there is this idea that all women know what intersectionality is, and
Boom.
it's not true. I went out to lunch after this kind of went down. I think that Friday I went out to lunch with one of my very close friends who's working on a project with me, Puerto Rican woman, and I'm telling her about my post, and I start talking about intersectionality, and she looks at me and she's like, "What's intersectionality?" Right? And I also teach life coaching, inclusive coaching for a life coach organization. You may have heard it, Martha Back. So I teach inclusive coaching for their cohorts. And a lot of the women, it's mostly women, have never heard of intersectionality, right? If they have heard of it, they've heard of it from their children, have taught them intersectionality. So let me define intersectionality, and I'm kind of going to read it from the screen so everyone can understand. So intersectionality was created for us to understand how identity works inside systems of power. And it was coined by Kimberlé Crenshaw. So I also want to give, a shout out to the creator who's still living, who's still writing about this and pushing change. And she did this in 1989. So in 1989, she was already analyzing discrimination cases for Black women who were being sued by their employers, right? And what they found out for Black women is that the courts dismissed their claims, because the legal system did not treat race and gender equally. In fact, they were considered separate issues. So if someone said their race and their gender matter to the court case, it would get thrown out. Think about that. Their intersectionality of identity was keeping them from having good outcomes in the court system. And Crenshaw Kimberlé was just like, no, right? So she showed that, Black women face a different form of discrimination because it's not just and Black and woman. It's every time you add a layer of identity that's already marginalized, oppressed, you're adding another level of bias, right? It just kind of multiplies and multiplies and compounds. So this all emerged as a framework that everyone uses, despite if they're not Black. But I want to give, knowledge to why it was created. But the idea is just to understand that the more identities you hold, again, that are marginalized, the more vulnerabilities you're going to have within these systems. So when I saw white women saying, "Hey, I'm just going to change my gender," I was like, "Whoa." And mind you, full transparency, I changed mine for 24 hours because my background is digital marketing. So I just wanted to look, right? But something told me, let's change it back. And the reason I changed it back was because it's not the same. The way the algorithm works, especially on LinkedIn, it's looking at multiple things. It's looking at your bio, your profile, your pronouns. It's looking at the people you follow. It's looking at the words in your post. It's not just looking at this one piece. It's actually looking at everything around you. And it does not matter if I toggle my gender, it's still going to know I'm Black. It's still going to know this is the type of thing she cares about. It's going to know that I use certain words like equity and other things that are banned. And so it's still, when it gets to the trust and safety level, it's going to flag me. So it's not the same for everyone. And like I said, this is how we got here. This is how 2025 started. Women forgetting that when we vote against our own actions, when we work and forget about everyone involved, we all lose. So even if LinkedIn changes the way they look at gender, it does nothing for me. It does nothing for trans women and men. It does nothing for Indigenous because we have an identity that is larger than a gender toggle.
I am so glad you started with what is intersectional because I forget sometimes that not everyone knows that. I totally agree with you. I walk into spaces and depending on the day, I will say like, I'm an intersectional advocate. And I will have women come up to me afterward and they're like, what is intersectional? I was like, oh wow, okay, let's talk about that. Well, what creates your entire identity as a, what are all those intersections and where do they all meet? And for me to create Amy, like, where did all my intersections meet? So I love that you started there. And
Yeah, that's how I felt when I was writing the post.
I'm so glad you did, and that some people met it with certain ways, certain things. There was just so much to share because, y'all, it's not that simple. And that's where I feel, let me take it all the way back to like 1920. White women could vote in 1920. Go ahead.
Nope, I'm just putting an exclamation point on what you're saying.
Right. It's like, and I actually created a timeline from 1920 to 1965 of when the different women could vote. It was white women and then Asian women, the Native American women. And oh, by the way, let me get spicy for a minute. White women cut a deal with the government to let them vote and like guaranteed that they would hold back the black man vote. So there were concessions made. So anyway, I. Okay.
Yes.
Without creating villains. Okay.
No,
I
we're
tried.
talking truth. This is
This is
history,
fact. You're
and
right. You're
people
right.
don't want people remember what did they say that the winners rewrite history. Let's not rewrite it. You know, this is what happened.
That's
This
how
is
white women
our
got to vote.
history,
Yeah.
and it's okay to accept this as your history,
You're right.
right?
You're
Without
right.
having to feel shame about it,
You're
right? This
right.
is
You're
not
right.
shame. This is not guilt. This is accepting history and how you allow history to play out now that you're in existence.
Yes, thank you so much. You're right. This has been happening since the beginning. And so, of course, we're still seeing it here. And to your point, what I try to lovingly educate white women on is try to be aware and acknowledge that you didn't know that, but then navigate differently, perhaps by any degree, to understand that every system, everything that we do, everything where we're at this exact time and space, feminism has been only geared toward the benefit of white women.
Some people say, like, are you a feminist? By definition, probably not. I'm probably a black feminist. But the reason I would say I'm black feminist, it has nothing to do with black and brown. It's black feminism is inclusive of all ethnicities, backgrounds. Like, it's a lot of queer black women were part of the role of feminism in the 70s and civil rights. They were queer, they were lesbians, right? So it was built for inclusion. You know, and that's what we want when we talk about all women. That's what black feminism is, all women. So as much as I want to be like, oh, I'm a feminist, historically I'm not.
And
Just
I,
by the nature of being a black woman, I am historically not a feminist
right.
because we weren't on the same page,
No.
right? So I want all of us to come onto the same page
Yeah.
because we are almost more than 50%. And if we look at the effect on the most marginalized, it elevates to everyone. So I have this, I stole this story from a DEI friend, and he talks about, he puts it in this metaphor of an aquarium. Like, you know how people, they love their big aquariums and they get all these like fancy exotic fish and stuff. So there's this guy, he loves all these fish, he wants all these different things, but he's been keeping it kind of basic, right? The regular typical fish, a goldfish, you know, these things. Well, he goes to the store and says, I want to change the ecosystem in my aquarium. I want to bring in these type of fish, these type of plants. I want this, right? I want diversity. And the person at the store goes, you know, if you do that, you're actually going to have to change the pH system, the water, the container. Like, there's all these structural things you'll have to do to be able to take care of a diverse aquarium ecosystem. The guy's like, I'm going to do it. Well, he makes those changes. What happens? Not just the new fish, the new plants rose. Everything within that ecosystem got better food, better levels of pH, oxygen, like all cleanness, right? And that's the way I look at it when we talk about all. But we start at a central point, those who are marginalized, because when you focus on them, everyone benefits from those structural process situations. And that's why I had a full service DEI agency in January. And then I finally came to this realization for me, and it's not a realization for everyone in DEI, but that I was saying, hey, my background's process, right? Process reengineering. Maybe it's not always a cultural problem. Maybe it's a systemic process problem. And if I come into companies from a process, hey, let me look at your misalignment. Let me look at your processes. Let me see where your failing is. If we fix those things, guess what? Equity comes, right? Inclusion comes. And then you've created an ecosystem that actually allows for diversity and celebrates it.
See, and that's what I found at the end of my time in corporate. The DEI program that I experienced was on top of the systems and processes that actually genuinely weren't designed to ever support it. So there's a
Yes.
reason why it felt like there's a reason why. When 25 came in and there was this broad brush of like, oh, you don't have to do DEI anymore. It was like a house of cards. It fell quickly because it was on those processes and systems that were not
Yes.
rooted. And so that's where we are these days. And so we're in this interesting time where everything is getting dismantled and deconstructed, and that's pinching a lot. And doesn't it all have to come down so that we can create the new systems or processes that will actually be able to hold and root into the inclusion that you're talking about?
So it's so funny because I listen to the energy around me. I listen to what is being told for me to say, to do in my own way. And I remember being at a Christmas party last year, and I was talking to a group, and I said, you know what? If the system completely breaks, which it should, I think it will need to be replaced with something. And everyone was like, what is that? No, there's no need to and this is within DEI circles, right? There was just like, what do you mean we need to replace it? And I'm like, what I want to do is be ready with something to replace the void. If we aren't ready with something to put into that void, who would take over that power structure? Someone else who has no lived experience, who has no background in equity work or business or anything, right? They will fill that vacuum with something that will not lead to equity. So what are we going to do to create it? And that's what I'm doing right now. Like I'm working on creating systems and frameworks that allow us to hold our power within these structures. I see a lot about, petitions, and I'm not against people petitioning about to get things done. There's different ways to move levers, right? However, a petition without power does not lead to change. If a company says, hey, we're going to listen to this petition, we're going to change this, but they give us no power as part of their process, at any moment they can change. Good example, Target. Think about this. Target showed us for a while. It was a gradual DEI did not just disappear out of Target. It was like, this happened, LGBTQ happened, all this stuff started crumbling around our DEI, even though they were held up by Black and Brown and all these individuals, right? Especially the Black consumers. And then when they were under pressure, they took it away. We had no power to change that. So what is the next step? And I believe it's creating our own ecosystems. We're engaging on digital platforms, our own frameworks for how we train AI that does not consider who's in power right now. No, eventually you're going to go away, and I want to make sure something's created to fill in that gap when it happens.
Yvonne, that's exactly it.
It's power. I have this white paper on power and AI. It's not about gender and inclusion, it's about power. And that's the conversation we need to start having. Is who has the power, how AI engages with the power, and how we can maintain our digital autonomy within those spaces.
I have so many countless peers and stories about these amazing DEI practitioners at the beginning of 25 that were creating the spaces to literally deconstruct the systems processes in big corporations. They had contracts and they were going to do the flip toward the inclusive processes, and then that all got squashed. And I love that you repositioned to say, like, okay, let's find misalignments in the process and structure. Because when you approach, let's say, a leadership team and say, we've got to gut the, like we talked about technology, we've got to gut all of the technology and recreate anew. Oh, no, we're not doing that. And we're seeing it on a bigger level, to your point. The folks that are doing the dismantling right now, deconstructing, that are pinching a lot of humans. And by the way, my personal belief is that the most privileged need to feel it so that it can continue to come down. And I'm not suggesting the people that are dismantling or deconstructing are the ones that are going to come in and pioneer. Humans like you and me are the actual pioneers out here creating the new existence, creating, birthing the
Yes.
existence for all humanity, the existence that we deserve, the existence that we all came here to experience. We're out here pioneering that. And it's kind of a let 'em vibe over there. And it's not ignoring it, but it's like, okay, they're going to keep moving. They're going to keep getting pinched and getting louder and things. The ask for us is to hold the line, hold the power, to use your words, hold the line, hold the power, create the power in the new, which is actually rooted in something different than the old. And that's what we're doing.
And foundationally, everyone knows equity and diversity is profitable. You know what I mean? So when you dismantle all those things, you do not create a grand economy. I just went to the grocery store. Ground turkey was $9 for just that little package, right? We see beef 40 bucks for a steak. Oranges, a bag of oranges were $8. Like, what's going on? Stuff that, like, I get my daughter these fruit pops. They're typically $4.99. They are $6.99. I get them every week, so it was only last week that they went $6.99. These processes are not creating global stability or national stability. So, for companies who think that they can keep doing this cutting DEI, what are we seeing from them? They're going bankrupt. They're being sued. So, eventually, the balancing work, if, and we'll just talk, in the US, if we are going to stabilize, not stay in a recession, it's going to come down to building equity into your processes. If you don't, I always tell people it's expensive. I am all about the culture all day. I have like your pictures on your wall. Every other wall has the same type of pictures. I have justice, justice, just us. I have still we rise. I'm all about the culture. But what I do know working in business is that the realization to companies and those in charge, this is expensive. Expensive mistakes, expensive misalignment is wasteful. An executive need to understand it's unethical and it's wasteful, right? So if any time we're going to shift, move our country back or not back, but evolve it into something better, it's going to require other voices. And I think that's why I spoke up, is because those other voices were not being told in the stories. Even in the last few weeks, I've talked with so many different Black women, brown women in AI, who are doing stuff who I didn't know exist, right? There's so many voices. And when I think about creating ecosystems for change to fill the void, it is for me, I have to be raising those voices as leaders in the cause, right? If not, we will get drowned out again.
Okay, so Yvonne, one of the big things that you said early on that I want to make sure we hear from you is you poignantly were going to share specifically what we should be thinking about, whether it be misalignment in processes as we're approaching AI. You specifically said to make sure we're informing it, it's not informing us. So what does that look like?
So again, I'm publishing this work that's about describing the intersection of power, identity, and AI. And what I found that the core of that is digital autonomy. And we always, again, most people, a lot of people are not moved when they hear about, they hear DEI or culture or let's care about everyone. But when you start talking about their autonomy, interested because, people care about their own power and interest. And what I found is that just think about everyone doing the social experiment of gender. No one was mentioning intersectionality. They were training the algorithm not to understand intersectionality within the context of gender. And that's why at the end of my post, I was like, can you please put it in there? It was not a plea for the culture. It was a plea for training these systems. This is a machine, folks. This is a machine, literally a machine. And we come online, and this is what the machine tells us to do right now. We come online and we have to make a decision. What tone, what voice, what topic can I write that the machine will allow to gain visibility? What does that do in the terms of digital autonomy? It's taking away your autonomy. It's taking away your ability to show up on the internet and be who you are within the constraints of who you know you are from different layers. Why aren't we training AI to consider those things? So the future of us engaging, that's why it's about digital engagement frameworks. We need to retrain ourselves on how to engage within a world where AI already exists. AI is already here. Every time we type something in our phone, it's going through something that touches AI in some weird random way, right? AI is already putting together our entire profile. You could not have any social media presence. And guess what? AI has a box for you. Why? Because they're paying attention to your friends. They're paying attention to maybe other things about you. They're inferring based upon the environment and people who you are. So they actually have created a box for you. You don't get to run from this. So I think we need to start actively caring about what we say and what we type.
So is it fair? It feels like a lot of people are just blissfully ignorant, meaning they're maybe unintentionally. Oh gosh, like of course they're unintentionally they're unintentionally biasedly training the AI to continue the systemic bias
So think
by
about it.
like.
When I write about things, it always has some type of intersectional lens just because of who I am. Even if I don't use the word black or something, there's something in there that's very intersectional. So it's telling me my ChatGPT knows who I am and writes in an informed voice.
Mine does too.
Why? Because I'm sending, right? We're sending those data points. If you're not sending the right data, if you're sending biased data points, right? And the thing about it is that the data AI is sending is incomplete. We know it's based on stuff that was copywritten half the time, right? We don't know where it all came from. A lot of it was biased things. It's also incomplete because it has no knowledge of your real life, what you're doing offline. Unless you're feeding it into it. It doesn't know all the things happening in your home and stuff like this. So it has incomplete data, and we're trusting incomplete data to define who we are. So are we training AI or is AI training us? And I don't know about you, but I don't want to be trained by AI. I don't want my identity stolen from me for impressions and like invisibility. I have a company, I have a business, right? But to trade my power, and digital autonomy even goes further. It goes to the fact that, we're just allowing people to sell our data. Privacy doesn't exist. And we see the impact of this because governments are now coming in going, whoa, 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 big tech, what's going on? Regulation starting to occur. Regulation does not happen unless something's wrong. It does not happen unless something's already wrong, right? So what I'm really pushing people is to pay attention to how they engage. Now, that's very vague. Who knows? So for me, the framework I'm putting in, I'm actually broken it into four pieces. It's social, technical, intersectional, and behavioral. And the piece that I'm about to publish for all of those actually provide bullet points of what it looks like to engage ethically from a social standpoint, from how we build our technology to our behaviors, how we write about people or not write about people of intersectional identities. I'm actually giving folks the blueprint of this is ethical engagement so that no one goes, oh, what I don't know what that means. So I'm gonna keep doing what I'm doing. And I even provide questions to ask yourself before you post. before you build technology, before you engage, ask yourself these questions first. Right now, it's a free-for-all of conversation, and it's going to hurt us one day.
And we see it happening. There has been this consistent narrative over the past, I don't know, 3 to 6 months about women being suppressed by the algorithms, women being ousted in the workplace, and then now this gender, this on LinkedIn. And this is all training. And I love that you said at the very beginning, which is like the algorithms, are they perfect? No. And were they probably created by, were they created by a beautifully diverse group of people? No. But
Or
and
data,
or
no.
Or no, but and every time we say this is happening, that's feeding it too. So from an energetic perspective, when I was saying we create more energy of what we put out, we're actually doing
Yes.
the same thing in algorithms. And so we're creating the suppression, unfortunately, or I don't know, fortunately, unfortunately. And to your point, I tried the whole flip for 24 hours. It didn't do anything for me either because of what I talk about. I get tanked every day.
Yeah,
Like
yeah.
that's just
But
normal.
if you have never talked about that, guess what? You're safe. And and
I'm
now
not.
you no longer have the gender on top of it. So,
Nope, didn't it didn't change for me, and I
hey.
knew it was not going. I mean, by virtue of what my podcast is called, Women Making Moves, woman and women are on the DEI list. So.
I mean, yes, exactly. So it's about the fact that guess what? Right now, LinkedIn, Facebook, they are not obligated to change anything for us. So to start with trying to obligate them and shame them into change, this is what I don't realize. We already did that. What do you think 2020 to 2024 was? That's all everyone did was try and shame big folks into doing these things, right? It did not work. So to expect some reason 2026, 2025, this shaming companies into doing the right thing. Okay, but is that where our energy needs to be? And for me, that's not where my inner that's not going to move the line for me and my communities. It does
Saying,
not help me or my communities that I serve.
and frankly, you know that the old adage of no press is bad press, but like all of this context, there's like a million posts a day about how the LinkedIn algorithm is suppressing and about this gender thing. Well, LinkedIn's probably sitting there being like, oh,
Thank you. Thank you,
thanks.
free content.
Okay.
And to your point, all publicity is good publicity. That might actually be very patriarchal. But
Yeah.
let's step back about that. Is that the principle? Like I teach
Right.
classes on inclusive conversations, facilitating them, and I break down social guidelines that we have, like be respectful or don't take it personal. And I break it down saying, oh, this is actually very patriarchal. It's actually not helpful. It's
Yeah.
just that it's been put into our social world that these are accurate portrayals. Because some random person we don't know said all publicity is good publicity. We're just gonna Yeah, let's go with it. We need to be questioning these systems.
The
And when we
bottom
see the
line.
systems not working, we need to create something else on our own.
Sorry. Yeah. The bottom line is to take a pause and go, like, wait a second. Whew. How do I genuinely feel in this moment? And is this something that is in my unique blueprint soul DNA? Or is this something that was given to me or told to me?
Yes,
So it's a
yes.
pause. It's like, what do you genuinely want to create more of? Everything that you do, and Yvonne, you've done such an exquisite job saying this all hour. Everything that you do, every move that you make, every word that you say, every thought that you have, every word that you type, that is feeding not just an algorithm, but it's creating more. It's creating your lived experience around you. You are always creating. So
Yes.
be so mindful. You
Yes.
are that powerful. So just be aware of that.
And like some of the questions, like some of the things that like in the digital engagement, and I'm going to tell you'll be the first one to know what it's called. It's called Eden. Think about that,
Eden.
Eden. But
Yes.
it stands for ethical digital engagement norms. But it has that lens of, Eden is where the women, but it's ethical digital engagement norms. And in there, for some of these sections, these pillars, I have questions like before you talk, right? Am I responding to be helpful or to be seen? If this harms someone, how easy will it be to repair? And when we think of it from technical aspects, if this tool makes a mistake, how visible will that harm be, and who bears the consequences? Like, it's not rocket science here that I'm not creating like some, rocket science algorithm thing. It's literally stopping and saying, hey, what voices are shaping to narrative right now? And whose perspectives are being missed? Whose perspectives are being minimized? If we pause, and you said the word paused before we engaged, how better would our digital footprint look like? How more equitable? But look, most people don't know how. So I'm trying to create these frameworks that are like easily understood. And it's not a Bible. I always tell people when I do my workshops and I say things, I am not the Bible. This is not hard-coded. The goal is to give you some flexibility and a place to start. Pick a pillar. If it's social, if you're a developer, just look at the technical side of the questions over there. Like, pick a lane, a question, one thing that every day for a month you lean into to change the way you engage. That ripple effect will be amazing, right? And so that's where my goal is right now, is to kind of put this out to the masses to restart the conversation around power, identity, intersectionality, but with actual steps. Because this whole write better content, I am going to vomit. Like, I just can't. I can't. If someone else tells me to write better content, when I was a digital marketer, content writer back before digital worked, like, I will cry. But because it's so much bigger than that. And I think we just need to give people the tools. And guess what? When people change their behaviors, corporations change their behaviors. And that's power.
You're creating the new.
We have to change our behavior first. Are you willing to change your behavior and be inconvenienced is really the question.
That
Be uncomfortable.
being comfortable. Shout out to my fellow white women. Be open, be willing to feel uncomfortable, be willing to feel called in or called out and say, like, oh, interesting. Tell me more. Lead from a place of soul, not ego. There's so much amazing beauty in just being able to lend yourself to that learning. Yvonne, where can we find you and support your work?
Yeah, so you can find me at Social Edge, and that's edg.com. That's where my company, where I do, again, my internal misalignment work. I do what I call growth salons, where we go in and we do sprints and all type of things to get you back on the path. And I also do advisory. So like I said, I'm Jiminy Cricket for executives and VPs, especially in talent spaces and so forth, saying, hey, hold on, let's pause. Let's look at this. Let's see where we need to actually go. So if you're interested in that, socialedgeedg.com, and you can also just find me on LinkedIn. Yvonne Jackson is my little tag on there, and I'm easily found because I write pretty consistently nowadays. So
And it's exquisite content.
thank you.
Copy her posts and put them anywhere you see where there needs to be some loving education. Yvonne, closing remarks as we wrap up.
First of all, thank you for this conversation. I think the biggest part of even that post that brought us together was to asking folks, give other voices visibility, right? Give other people, other experts, the opportunity to engage in this conversation, especially if you have the platform for it. Because if not, we risk, even for myself, being silenced and erased. And that was the biggest thing for me, is when I saw everyone doing the social experiment on LinkedIn, I felt erased. And that was the sentence I wrote, I think, on Cass, who started a lot of the conversation on intersectionality. That's what triggered me to write my post, was I said on her post, you know what, this is making us become erased. And thank you for not erasing my voice and uplifting it instead.
Thank you so much, Yvonne.
Yes.